So you guys hear that recording, right? You hear that being, yeah, okay, the same that I do. So I think that it's not recorded, though. So I think I'll just shut my mouth now. Welcome, everybody. It's nice to see you all. Nice to see you all. It's such a beautiful thing to practice together. So today I wanted to talk a little bit more about loving kindness for the difficult person. I had done some of that on Tuesday. And I'd like to just say a little bit more. It's, doing loving kindness for the difficult person is not easy. And it's not quick. It's not like, oh, okay, you do it once or twice and then you're in a different place, you have a different relationship and everything's fine and you live happily ever after, right? Of course, it doesn't work that way, even though we wish it would, right? But maybe I'll say that it can be, I don't know what the word is, it can be uplifting, it can be inspiring, it can be helpful to feel like, okay, I have a path in which I believe, I trust, I suspect, I think is going to be helpful, is going to be able to shift some of these difficult relationships I have. Maybe not fast, maybe not dramatic, and maybe not in a straightforward, linear way, or a way that, matches my preferences. But there can be something nice about like, I think here's something that might actually work. Because so often we find ourselves in our lives, like when we have difficulties with at a loss, like, well, how do I go forward? What do I do? How can I fix this? And sometimes when we're trying to fix things, we just make them worse, even though we think that we're fixing them, right? It doesn't necessarily go the way that we imagine it's going to. So just appreciating that it's been practiced by, untold numbers of people, but you certainly do not have to take my word for this. This is just an invitation for you to try it out for yourself to see if this makes a difference in your life. And if it doesn't, then, there's no need to be doing this practice. But one thing that I also want to point out is that sometimes when we're doing loving kindness for a difficult person, and I'm using this word difficult just as a generic word, it covers such a wide range. For the people that we might feel like we hate using that kind of a strong language, and that we know personally, or maybe some of it's on the world stage that we have a lot of animosity or ill will towards. Or maybe there's just somebody that's mildly bothersome. I'm using this word difficult to cover this whole range. And I will say it's can be wise to start with the mildly troublesome and get some familiarity and get some confidence and some experience there. What we don't want to do is create the conditions in which a bunch of overwhelm or that we find ourselves just rehashing, and I can't believe this person did this or did that. And we just slip right into how difficult they are. That's not really the direction we're going. That being said, it wouldn't be surprising if while you're doing loving kindness for a difficult person, if you find yourself feeling angry, you find yourself feeling a little bit upset at the person who's supposed to be the recipient of loving kindness, and instead you find yourself filled with anger. Of course, right? But I want to point out, I was kind of like pointed in this direction. I have this experience, but as well as Sharon Salzberg kind of pointing out that sometimes the anger that we're experiencing and when we have the intention to be practicing loving kindness, but instead we are finding a lot of anger coming up, that anger might bring some clarity also. Maybe it kind of like cuts through the social niceties because it's just happening in our head while we're sitting still, right? And maybe it cuts through some of the denial or some of the avoidance or something that we might be having. So that anger might show us something that we maybe didn't know or weren't aware of before. But I don't want to glorify anger because, as well as maybe bring in some clarity, it almost always comes with a certain amount of delusion. This delusion of I'm this way, that other person is that way, and some story that doesn't have all the elements to it. When there's anger, there's a kind of a collapsing down and a shrinking to just some of the what we're angry about, of course. But the truth of the moment is there's lots, it's all of our experiences have many different elements. The same time that the action that caused us to be angry happened, there were different things, or there were sounds, maybe birds were singing if you were outside, or maybe you were sitting in a chair, you could feel the chair against your body. But of course, right, we don't remember that or aren't even aware of it when we're angry. But we get caught in this narrow definition of who we are and who that person is. And we forget that change is possible. We forget that there's more to the story. There's always more to the story than we know. So anger also kind of narrows things down, which helps us to not see clearly. Maybe we see a little aspect clearly, but we don't see the bigger picture. And the way forward always includes a bigger picture. So maybe I'll also say that sometimes there can be this hesitation, like I don't want to let go of this anger. And somehow there's this feeling that, or it's probably not clearly articulated in our minds, but this feeling of if I let go of my anger for this injustice, for this wrong, for this thing that happened that shouldn't have happened, then somehow we are afraid that we're going to let go of our values if we let go of our anger, or that we will let go of our principles if we let go of our anger, or we're afraid that we'll let go of our sense of right and wrong if we let go of our anger. But of course, that isn't true. We can maintain the clarity, and we can feel the anger, and we can not get lost or in the unhelpful parts of the anger, this loss of perspective or loss of seeing the bigger picture, but instead having a sense of fixation, a narrowing and a fixation, or doing destructive actions, or sometimes when we're angry and there's this constriction, we forget what's most important to us. So letting go of the anger is not letting go of our values, our principles, our sense of what's right and wrong. letting go of the anger is just a way that we are releasing what constricts us, what inhibits our freedom, obscures our seeing the bigger picture. And my saying these things is not going to make all the anger go away, right? This is something that we have to work with. Each of us has to find our own way with this. But loving kindness practice in itself, whether it's for the difficult person or not, is one way in which we can find a way which might support our recognizing that there are alternatives to anger. Or maybe if we are angry, maybe it just lasts for a fraction of the duration of time. It lasts just for a moment. And I heard Sam Harris say this once, and I thought it was such an excellent point, that even if the anger still arises, but it's just for a shorter amount of time, the amount of harm that can be done for 2 days of being angry compared to the amount of harm that can be done with 2 hours being angry is much less. And that's the direction we want to go, right? We don't want to harm ourselves. We don't want to harm others. So I could go on and on about this, but I just feel like when we're going to talk about doing loving kindness for a difficult person, it needs a little bit of support. So I want to kind of normalize if you find yourself slipping into anger. You might not, but if you do, you can say, oh, here's anger. And you can do some mindfulness practice. You can feel the anger, how it feels in your body. Or you could stay with loving kindness practice and maybe go back to the lovable being where it's easy. Or maybe do some loving kindness practice for yourself, because anger is a kind of suffering, that constriction, the feeling of heat. So the encouragement is not to slip into overwhelm. And if you find that happening, open your eyes, do a little bit different practice. And don't underestimate how powerful it can be to just like touch in to be having loving kindness for the difficult person and then feeling it slide into something that's not so helpful. And then come back out. That's tremendously helpful. And it doesn't matter how many times you have to do that. So, loving kindness for a difficult person. Just as something we might use to help us find our way in this life, in this world. Okay, so with that is kind of a rather long introduction. Let's do some meditation. Settling in. What does it feel like to have a body at this moment? What does it feel like to sit and to know that you're sitting, either literally sitting or figuratively in a meditation posture? Just in general, checking in with the body. can be helpful to feel the pressure against the body, whatever you're sitting on. Way to help us feel grounded. Sometimes meditation, we can feel a little ungrounded. Can be supportive to stay connected to the ground in some way. Noticing the body breathing. What does it feel like to breathe? The sensations in the body. Whether it's in the chest, abdomen, or the feeling of air going in and out of the nose. Just tuning into the sensations of breathing. Nothing in particular needs to be happening. We're just noticing what it feels like to have a body that breathes. And when the mind wanders, just very simply, gently begin again. And this gently part is an opportunity for us to bring a little bit of loving kindness to our mindfulness practice. Can we have an attitude of warmth in the way that we approach mindfulness of breathing? Maybe with the exhale, it's a little bit of letting go, a little bit of relaxing. then to begin our loving kindness practice. We'll begin where it's easy. So bringing to mind a lovable being. This can be kittens, puppies, babies, using your imagination. It can be somebody you know and care about and have an uncomplicated relationship. It can be somebody you know about, somebody who has inspired you or touched you with their teachings or writings. Can you connect with this lovable being in a way that makes sense for you and is without straining? Can there be an easeful way to connect, either by perhaps visualizing, or maybe there's another way that's not even quite clear exactly how it is you're connecting, that you feel connected. And then to support our cultivating loving kindness, our connecting to our intention of developing loving kindness, warmth, care, respect, we can say these phrases. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. Allowing yourself to feel the experience of wishing the lovable being goodwill. It might be that there are bodily sensations, sense of warmth in the chest and the heart center, a sense of openness or spaciousness or ease. And allowing that to support you. Support you and maybe support loving kindness. Maybe loving kindness comes out of a sense of openness, spaciousness, warmth. And then to expand this loving kindness to include ourselves. I think it's a good idea to always include ourselves. For many, many of us, the inner critic shows up in so many different ways. Doing some loving kindness for ourselves is a way to maybe dampen that voice. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. Can connect with loving kindness for yourself, either by with an image of yourself, or maybe the felt sense of what it's like to sit here now. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. We can Let any of the inner critic just be quiet for now. You can pick it up later if you'd like. But for now, just have some warmth and care and love for ourselves. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease.